Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and here is a surefire sign of spring. From here on out, every Friday is Hort Day through November. The growing season is just around the corner, but even though things aren't growing yet, our below-freezing nights and above-freezing days are exactly what are needed to get the sap flowing in maple trees. Later this hour, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, will be here to answer your plant and tree questions, but we're going to start the hour with Katie Kluse, a naturalist at Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls. Hello, Katie.
Hey, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And as I just mentioned, these below freezing nights and above freezing days are key for getting the sap flowing. What's going on in maple trees right now?
So what's happening is the trees are practicing. So you know, if you look out on your trees right now, of course, there's probably not going to be any leaves, or it may be a few from last year, but that's about it. And the trees have yet to bud out. So then, of course, from the buds grow leaves, and then the tree goes through its cycle. Well, this time of year, we have this above freezing. So all that water basically movement within the tree, all that ice thaws out. And so the tree is kind of practicing. So it's moving sugars and minerals from its roots below ground up to the branches where the buds will be here, hopefully, you know, in the next month or so. People use maple syrup time to take a little bit from the tree when it's practicing and it's not using its sugars.
Okay, so we need to tap the trees to get some of that sap. How do you do that? How do you put something into the tree that's going to help you get your hands on that sap?
Sure. So it's actually a fairly simple process. It's been going on for a long, long time. Pioneers, Native American tribes, they all have been doing maple syrup collection in one way or the other. Today, of course, we have a lot of different options from, you know, the backyard, you know, tap a few trees all the way up to the commercial operations in the Northeast, for example. But if you just want to try it on your own, tap a few trees in the backyard. All you basically need is a drill. You're going to drill a couple inches into the tree, and then you can put in either a plastic or a metal, what's called a spile. So it's just like a little spout or like a straw. And then you can either place, if you use plastic, you can use then tubing to put it into, say, like a milk jug and just hang it right there on the tree. Or if you use a metal spile, you can go ahead and just drill a hole through a 5-gallon bucket or anything else similar that you've got at home and just hang it right there on the tree.
Does it hurt the trees?
It doesn't. There's definitely ways that you can go about doing maples. If you plan to do it for multiple years, there's definitely things you can do that may harm the tree if you do it incorrectly. Like, for example, when at Hartman, we've been tapping the trees for many years now. And so when I go this season, actually on Saturday, when we go out to tap the trees, I have my sugar maple in front of me. That's what we tap at the Nature Center. And I see all these holes, kind of scars. Trees have scars just like we do. So from last year, I'll be able to see the scar from the hole that we made last year. So when I go to do a new hole, I'm not going to put it right on top of the old scar. And I also try to move it away from that that scar as well. So over time, if you tap in the same place all the time, it will cause damage to the tree. And other things, like if your tree's already maybe dying or not doing well, it's losing a lot of leaves, just general things, and it's stress, the last thing you want to do is add more stress by poking a hole in it. So just make sure your tree's nice and healthy, and make sure that if you're planning on doing this for multiple years, make sure you're rotating around the tree where your hole is being placed.
Now, a lot of people have sugar maple trees in their yards. They're an extremely popular tree to plant. Our forester, Mark Vitosh, would tell us that they're a little too popular and we need to diversify. But if you have planted a maple tree, how old does it need to be? How big does it need to be before you can tap it?
Well, there actually is some really interesting research going on with that, kind of more on the commercial side. But traditional kind of thought or traditional process tells us the tree needs to be about 18 inches in diameter for it to be old enough to be tapped. But there is some very interesting information coming out of some universities out in the Northeast about potentially having kind of almost doing a tapping of saplings. So they're doing some long longitudinal studies out there. So who knows? New research may come out here in the next few years that may change our minds about, you know, what has always been taught.
What makes the sap of maple trees and sugar maples specifically so special? Because all trees have sap.
That's very true. Yeah. So sap, you know, us humans are pretty picky. You know, we really like sugary sweet things. And so sugar maples were named sugar maples because they have a, of all the maples, they have the highest amount of sugar content within their sap. And frankly, you know, I say highest, but really you're only looking between 3 and 5% of that sap is actual sugar content. So, you know, it sounds like, ooh, they have the highest, but you know, it's really not a lot, which we can talk, you know, a little bit later about, but yeah, so sugar maples are the best because they have a high amount of sugar. And then of course, other maples, all maples can be tapped. Even things like box elder trees, are technically maples. You can tap those. And then there are other trees people have decided to tap. So you can also do walnut trees. Up in Alaska and in Canada, they do birch trees. Obviously, you have to be ready, though. You can't have birch syrup and then think it's going to taste like maple syrup. So it definitely has a more savory taste to it. But that's why I think we like maple syrup so much, is because of that sweetness factor.
Well, and you mentioned 3 to 5% sugar content in the sap. That is not very much. And every time I hear that, I think about how remarkable it is that anybody ever figured out that you could do this. And I know that this has an incredibly long history, and Indigenous people were making maple sugar, maple syrup for a very, very long time before any colonizers came to this country. So somebody somehow stuck their tongue into the sap of a maple tree and thought, that tastes vaguely sweet. If I boil it, it's going to get better. It just blows my mind.
Well, and other animals do also kind of inadvertently drink the sap. So like, especially in Hartman, we see after we tap trees, sometimes, especially on that first day, you know, there can be, if it's nice and warm, you know, a lot of stuff comes out of the tree and it'll start, the hole will start to weep. Right away. And we see deer like licking the trees afterward, all kinds of stuff. Even squirrels you'll see doing it. So who knows, maybe that Indigenous person saw, you know, all these deer licking trees and be like, what is going on? You know, maybe that's how they figured it out. I'm not sure.
So at Hartman, when you have collected sap, I mean, how much sap do you have to collect to make a reasonable amount of syrup? What's the proportion?
Sure. So we at Hartman Reserve, we use our syrup for an annual pancake festival that we do. And so we really are looking to make quite a, you know, a good amount. Whereas if you're in your, you know, if you're just doing this in your backyard, you probably don't need 25 gallons, you know, in the house, or most people don't. But it is definitely a process. You got to be ready. If you're going to tap, it is a labor intensive process. So for our sugar maples, it is about 40 gallons of sap equals 1 gallon of finished maple syrup. So,
wow.
And depending on, you know, and remember, you know, too, at Hartman, you know, our timber is truly a woodland. So, you know, these trees are competing with the trees around them for nutrients and water and sunlight and things like that. That silver maple that you have, that giant silver maple that may be in somebody's backyard, is not really competing as hard for things like sunlight and nutrients and things like that. So it actually may produce a higher sugar content potentially, or have a lower ratio than some of our trees that are in a woodland. But typically that 40-to-1 ratio is for sugar maples is kind of the accepted kind of average. Silver maples are about 60 gallons to one, so to 1 gallon of finished.
So I think that this is a good point, or a good part for a cautionary tale, because if you're boiling something that is 40-to-1, that is a whole lot of evaporation. And I know that commercial maple syrup producers have evaporators and all kinds of things. You actually boil outside, right?
We used to.
Okay.
Historically at Hartman, about 10-ish years ago, we actually built a new programming building, and they added a sugar house onto that. and then purchased a larger kind of, it's called a hobbyist evaporator. So it's not as big as some of those, obviously, that's producing, you know, for a commercial business, but it's definitely going to be more than, you know, just a pan in the out, you know, in the
right.
open air.
Well, and I know people who've tried to do this on their stove and actually ruined their wallpaper because it's just so much moisture.
Yes.
So doing this on your stove may not be a good idea, right?
Yes. Oh, turkey. Like most people or a lot of people can get their hands on a turkey fryer. From most people that I talk to that kind of do it more just with the family outside, they end up using a turkey fryer for it.
Okay.
So, and of course gets pushed by propane. So that you definitely have to do it outside because not only do you have a lot of steam coming off, but you also, some of that, kind of stickiness travels, as well. So like, for example, in our sugar house, the walls are covered in, that like plasticky cement board type stuff. And we have to go through and wash the walls every year because they get sticky.
Oh, wow.
From all the steam coming off of our evaporator. So, you know, keep that in mind. If you have, like you said, wallpaper or wood trim or, frankly, you know, no hood vent is going to help you in a 40-to-1 situation. You're definitely going to have to do it outside. So
okay.
I do know some people that have, like, do it on, like, a in their garage but leave the door open.
Uh-huh.
I just, word of caution, you know, definitely know that going in, especially if you're going to, you know, boil quite a bit, you know. If you're just doing a little bit off of a tree, you know, and you're only going to make maybe a cup of maple syrup, that's not too big of a deal. But, yeah, if you're going to make more than a gallon, you better be ready.
All right. And normally you do have your big maple syrup pancake festival every spring. Of course, we're still in the midst of a pandemic. So you're actually inviting people out to tap the trees on Saturday?
Yes. We decided to have a variety of small programs to help compensate for, you know, because we have over 2,000 people come out to the Maple Syrup Festival every year, and all those people get to go through and tour our sugar house and see how it's made, help us collect. And we just thought we will try to find a way to let folks still in on the process and get to participate and kind of hopefully, you know, have a spring that's semi-normal, even without the Pancake Festival. So we are inviting them this Saturday. Come on out.
All right. And you do need to make a reservation if you're going to do that. HartmanReserve.org. We will talk more in just a moment. Katie Kluse is with me, a naturalist from Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about making maple syrup, something that you can do with the maple trees in your yard. You can tap your trees and make some syrup on your own, although it is a pretty big undertaking. With us is Katie Kluse, a naturalist at Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls. Again, they're having March Maple Madness all month long, so you can find out more about some of the events that they're having if you're in that area, HartmanReserve.org. And of course, there are other nature centers around the state of Iowa that do similar things. So if you get excited about this, check out what's going on in your neighborhood. Also joining us today, Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And of course, you can join the conversation with your tree tapping questions or with questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Katie, we already have a great question from Julie in the Quad Cities for you. How long do you let the sap drip into the bucket? A day? A week? What do you do?
Oh, sure. Sap can go bad. So you definitely want to check your tree about once a day. And frankly, when it gets really warm, we have trees in our timber that we have to check twice a day. Otherwise, it overflows out of the bucket. So definitely keep an eye on it, especially on those nice cold nights and those really nice warm sunny days, especially if you have a tree that's just sitting out in your yard and, you know, doesn't get a lot of shade from other trees or other structures. Another, I guess, kind of question based on that is like, how long is the season? So how long can you keep taking, you know, sap from the tree? So definitely watch your tree. So if it starts to bud out, That means that the tree's starting to use its sugar, and the syrup, or the, I'm sorry, the sap will get cloudy, and it will taste really bad. So when you have nice, good sap before the tree's bud out, when you taste that sap, it should actually taste a lot like water with a little bit of sweetness in it, and it should be fairly clear. So that's kind of one of the indicators of when the season is, quote unquote, done for the year.
All right.
And also watch your temps.
Right. Right now, this has been the perfect weather just the last couple of days for tapping trees. So tell me what we're watching for with temperatures. When does it start to look like it's going to be too late, Katie?
We definitely, if your nights start to get creep above freezing. So once we get to like a consistent 33-ish degrees and no snow on the ground, of course, remember that snow is an insulator, so it's going to keep the ground cold. But once we have all the snow gone, nights are above freezing, days are well into the high 40s, 50s, constant sunshine, you definitely are going to start to have to watch it and be ready to close up shop for the year.
All right. And some years the season is an eye blink and other years it goes a couple of weeks, right?
Yes. Yeah. This year, I don't know. It's getting awful warm pretty fast. So it may only be a few weeks this year. Well, I mean, time will tell. People always ask me, well, how long? I said, it all depends on the weather.
All right. I'm always asking people to be able to see into the future on this show, but I guess we can't. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. And Aaron, we've got a question for you from Cheryl in Iowa City. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
How are you? I bought a small Norfolk Island pine at Christmas to use as a Christmas tree. And I would like to know what best practices to keep it alive so I can enjoy it throughout the year and next Christmas as well.
So Norfolk Island pine really wants bright light, as bright of light as you can get it. But it doesn't necessarily need to be in the full blazing sun. And so kind of that bright indirect light where it's getting a lot of light, but not necessarily more than a couple of hours of sunlight actually on the leaves is usually a good spot in the house for it. One of the things you'll find with Norfolk Island pine is that when humidity levels are really low in your home, it's prone to get spider mite. So you'll want to kind of watch for that little it's not technically an insect, but that little pest. And when humidity levels are really low, they tend to drop their lower branches. So you'll want to watch for that. That might be a sign that you'll want to raise the humidity if you can in your home or in the place where the plant is. The last thing I'll say about Norfolk Island pine is it definitely has an expiration date in your home. And by that, I mean these things get really big with time. They were used for ship masts when they were found in the Southern Pacific Islands. So this plant will get huge. It will take a very long time to get there in your home, though. So you'll be able to enjoy it for many years.
Oh, that's great. It has like four or five stalks or trunks. It's sort of bushy. Can I cut back some of those?
You can, although sometimes it's nice to have the multi-stem because the plant can get really bare at the base because most of us in our homes don't have enough humidity to make this plant as happy as it wants to be. And so having those multi-stems or multi-trunks helps keep the plant looking full.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Cheryl. And Aaron, is a Norfolk Island pine something that you could move outside during the summer or would it be best to keep it inside?
It is, but don't put it in full sun. Move it out to full shade. You can transition it to maybe part sun for the summer and then pull it back inside before temperatures usually get below about 45 degrees. That's my cue to be like, all right, let's bring everybody back indoors for the winter.
All right. So all the light you can give it inside, but not outside.
Right. But not outside, because the difference in light, even in a bright window, the intensity of light indoors is much lower than outside. And you don't want to shock the plant by basically moving it from too much into too much light too quickly.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. We've got another maple syrup question for you, Katie. Nora is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Nora.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have two maple trees that I've tapped in the past. I was planning to do them again this year and try to do it every other year. And one of the arms on the maple, the big branch that comes off of it, is turning black. The bark is black. And it's, 10 feet up probably. But I was wondering if that means there's a problem with my tree, and it's been that way for years, but I just didn't know if it was a problem with the tree.
Actually, not as much as we've found. So we have trees that also have that darkness on one side. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have ones that almost like have it in bands. Maybe Aaron can chime in a little bit more on the plant biology side of this. But we have found that they don't produce less. They don't get damage. You know, they show damage later because we tap them. We don't see an issue with it. So I don't know if Aaron has more on if there's something, unseen and maybe it doesn't hurt the tree. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have trees out in the woods that have that and it's natural.
Yeah, it's like a great big dark stripe,
Mm-hmm. So. Yep.
When you see black on the tree, sometimes it could be an indication of a fungal disease like verticillium, which is, I won't say it's common in maples, but it definitely happens on maple trees. It also could be just as simple as, an innocuous fungus growing on some of the sap that's dripped and has stayed on the bark of the outside of the tree. So, if I'm noticing something like that, and it's a tree that's really important, I would definitely take some photos, send a photo to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State University. And if you search those terms, you'll find their contact information online, because verticillium, if it is that, is something that can bring a maple tree, down with time. It could also be something really innocuous. So it's worth looking into more.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Nora. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Dave is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I've got a question about a Christmas cactus.
All right.
I took a start off of an existing one, about a 20-year-old plant. And this one... the new one, I put in some potting soil, and I watered about every 7 to 9 days, but it kind of cascades or droops a little bit over the edges. So I was just wondering if I'm watering too much, not enough, so forth. And I didn't have roots on when I planted the starts. So I put 4 starts in there, and they didn't have roots. So I just put them right in the potting soil.
Yeah. Do they have roots now?
I don't know because I haven't gone down into the soil to see.
Sure. Well, you can usually give them just a light little tug, and if they don't move, then you're good.
Okay.
The natural Christmas cactus naturally kind of has a drooping growth habit. And so as the plant gets fuller, it will hopefully have a bit more upright branches and those thick flattened branches, but at the beginning it can look a little sad because you have these usually 3 or 4 segment pieces just kind of laying in a container. Giving it good care, I don't know how dry things are, but Christmas cactus likes it a little on the dry side. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to make sure that the soil, especially if they've produced roots, make sure that the soil dries out on the surface before you water. That may be every 7 to 10 days, or it may be less often. So you want to check it with a regular basis and water when that soil surface is dry. And then with time, it will fill out and it'll look better. But at first, it's very common for them to have this kind of droopy look to them because that's how they grow. They kind of have this kind of droopy habit.
Okay. And how about lighting?
Good bright light will be best for this. It'll also help it fill out faster. And starting probably around March, end of March or so, you can start fertilizing it maybe every other time with half-strength general all-purpose fertilizer. And that will help kind of get it growing and filling out faster too.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Dave. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to Vic on the line in Ames. Hi, Vic. Vic, are you
Hi.
There? Hi. And you've got a tip for
us,
right?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah. I learned a trick. I've been collecting maple syrup for probably 30-plus years. And I used to take Mother Earth News magazine, which some of your readers or your listeners will be aware of. And the trick was that you freeze the sap. And then when you thaw it out, the first part that thaws out has most of the sugar in it. So you can reduce probably 75 to maybe more percent of all the water without even having to heat up your kitchen. And I've been doing this with my own children and then with my neighbor's children. And I have some land that has a lot of maple trees and box elder, which both produce a lot of sap.
Oh, that's great.
So anyway, it's just been a fun thing to do. Sometimes we'll boil it down to where it becomes maple sugar, which is about the nicest candy you can make. And anyway, you have to have a lot of room in your freezer. Fortunately, I have a freezer that I just start emptying out starting months early so that I have a nice supply of jugs, and I might end up collecting 20 jugs or so.
Oh, wow.
When you freeze it, you want to pour out. You don't want to fill the jugs all the way to the top because it will actually break the maple, the milk jugs.
Right, because it expands.
So I pour out maybe the first cup to the first pint. I leave that, sure, I don't fill up all the way full. And if I leave that much room, well, then I just save the first that melts off. And there you go. It comes out sweet that way.
Well, Vic, thanks so much for sharing that tip with us. And Katie, I mean, that is the most traditional way to make maple syrup, right? Because, of course, when this was first done, people didn't have metal pots that they could boil in.
Sure, definitely. And there is some evidence from some Native American tribes, specifically out east, the Iroquois, for example, where they would, again, we actually pose this kids or question to kids when they come for field trips. Like, if you don't have a metal pot, how are you going to boil anything? And so it's pretty hilarious to have them think through it. And then, you know, we always get, well, what about a microwave? You know, well, they didn't have those either. So, and they used to use, and other Native Indigenous peoples from even the Pacific also have used this technology of heating up rocks, you know, these really heavy marble rocks and in a fire and then dropping them in water, and then it causes boiling. So, you know, when you explain that to them, they the kids become really thankful of things like microwaves. So.
and me too. All right, let's get back to the phone. Steve is on the line next in Hubbard. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hi. I have a couple of walnut trees, or a number of them, that were damaged in the derecho, and they're going to have to come down this summer. But I read that you can tap a walnut tree like a maple tree and that it makes a really tasty walnut sort of a syrup. Do you know anything about that?
Katie?
Yes. Yeah, you definitely can tap a black walnut. It definitely, though, you know, like I said earlier, prepare yourself. It's not going to taste like maple syrup. It definitely has more of a, it reminds me of like sorghum and molasses, some of those really darker, it's definitely going to come out very dark in color. So it's a really great use for really savory things, marinades. You can do some really cool stuff with black walnut syrup. And like I said, there's, you know, folks that do that. They do it with birches, all different kinds. It's definitely going to come out with a different flavor. So I encourage you, you know, if you've got multiple, you know, on your property, do it, especially if they're going to come down, you know, try it out and see if it's something you like, and maybe that'll influence the choice of tree you plant next.
Now, I have to look around and see if I can order a sampler. I'm very, very curious about what all of those different syrups would taste like, although I don't think I actually want to go out and tap my walnut trees. But here's a question, Erin, from Margaret in Shoeyville. She says, I want to transplant 6 Huber's Tawny Gold spreading yew plants. When is the best time to do this?
I would say kind of early spring. So for most of us, that's going to be early to middle April. But you can do it as late as the middle of May and still have really good success. That'll be a fairly, those plants tend to transplant well.
I think with these warm days, we all get really itchy fingers and we're ready to do something.
Yes, yes, I am ready to do something, and all of my stuff is still under some big piles of snow. So.
Right, right. Well, the snow may actually keep us in check this year instead of going out and doing things a little too early. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Erin Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Katie Kloos is here today, a naturalist at Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls. They are celebrating March Maple Madness all month long, so you can find out more at their activities on their website, hartmanreserve.org. And of course, nature centers all over Iowa are doing similar things. So check out what's going on at the nature center near you. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and a sure sign of spring, Horticulture Day is weekly from now through the end of the growing season, weekly now through November. With me today, Erin Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and also Katie Kloos is here, a naturalist at Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls. She's here to tell us all about tapping trees and making maple syrup. So if you have questions for her, feel free to give us a call. But of course, Erin can answer all of your questions about the other plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mary in Des Moines says, I have a problem area roughly 4 foot by 4 foot that is part of a flower bed in front of my house. Most of the day, it's in the shade from a tree. In summer, it gets direct hot sun exposure for up to 4 hours. Are there any plantings, shrubs, annuals, or perennials, anything that I could plant that could survive these conditions, Erin?
Yeah, that's a tough spot to have the only real full sun that it gets being really hot, kind of end of the day light. I would probably lean towards some of the really hardy shrubs or perennials. So things like Spirea, which is a pretty hardy plant. Many of them will take a little bit of shade, but can tolerate, because they're such tough plants, can tolerate those kind of harsh conditions. The other thing I might look into, depending on how much sun it's getting, some of the green-leaved hostas might be a good option. These are very tough plants. That's part of the reason why they're so popular. So if you're noticing that the leaves are burning on a regular basis, then that one might be getting a little too much sun. But those might be some good options to look into.
All right. keep trying is what I'm hearing.
Keep trying. Yeah. And that's, you know, honestly, that's some of the fun of this is just trying some new things, making sure that you have a game plan. If it's not going to work, you know, you have another place to move those hosta. If they don't work there, it's okay. That's part of the fun of gardening is trying new things and seeing what happens.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Joe is on the line in Slater with an apple tree question. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
Well, we bought some apple trees, actually pears, peaches, plums, and cherries. We got 19 trees overall. They're all in pots right now. What's the best way to hold them for the next so many weeks till the ground thaws?
If you have a cool but tempered space, like a three-season porch or an unheated garage, that's probably going to be the best place to put this. You can't dig a hole and set them in the ground. Normally, even containerized plants, we would do that, but the ground is frozen, of course. So finding a spot that is still cool, so it isn't going to heat up to like 70 degrees when we have a nice, warm, sunny day, but also isn't going to get down into like the low 20s when we have a cold night, that's going to be your best spot. And the other thing I'll mention is you want to make sure that you watch them for water. They won't need a lot of water, but they may dry out, and that can be really rough on the plants. So checking on them often to make sure that they need water. I have a good garden friend who always puts a gallon jug in with them. And if the gallon jug is not frozen, then he can use that to water the plants if they need it. And if it is frozen, then he knows he doesn't need to water it.
Okay. So we purchased them yesterday. They seem to be semi-dry. Should I go ahead and water them? Because they're telling me not to, so that they don't come out of dormancy.
Yeah, it's okay if they're a little dry. They should be on the dry side, but they can't be like bone dry. They will need a little bit if that happens. Yeah, it's good to keep them a little on the dry side.
If I have a small excavator, can I get them planted before the thaw is completely finished?
You probably wouldn't need to do that. It'll be good to get them in the ground as soon as you can, especially while they're still dormant. But you'll need to water them in and all that stuff anyway. So it's okay to wait for the ground to thaw and do it then.
Okay, great. I love you guys' show and enjoy listening every week.
Well, thanks a lot for your call, Joe, and good luck with that. Let's go next to Greg on the line in Jefferson. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you, Charity?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about the maple tree tapping. I was wondering, from what I've seen, they make like an inverted chevron of cuts into the bark and then a half pipe underneath it that collects what flows out of the cork cambium or the xylem or the phloem or whatever part we're talking about.
All right. Well, Katie, I suppose there's probably multiple techniques. Are you familiar with the one that Greg is talking about?
Not too much. I mean, I've seen it where, you know, something happens to, you know, say equipment or something clips a tree. And then it, you know, of course, then the sap pours out of it, you know, or leaks out of it. As far as collection, I guess I can't speak too much to it because I don't know much about it, but I assume that it wouldn't be super efficient. You know, by putting in a spout, you know, you're really collecting and drawing that out into a bucket that, and it also may be a bit cleaner too. You know, if it's running down the side of the bark, you're going to be collecting, you know, all kinds of roughage and things from the bark as well. And ants and moths and things like that. And two, you know, for folks that want to do this home, you will sometimes get moths and, you know, ants and other things, you know, in the sap, and that's okay. You know, they're coming for the sweetness too. But I assume that if you had kind of that part chevron, like a little slit cut in the tree, it would just, it wouldn't be as efficient as if you were to, you know, drill a hole, for example. But again, I haven't done it, so.
How deep does the hole go below the cork cambium into the xylem, I'm assuming, or the phloem?
Yeah. Yep, you're basically wanting to get into those xylem phloem, so those structures that are moving, you know, the sap up and down the tree. So it's only a few inches into the tree.
Yes, if you go too deep, you're just into the. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, and it's not really helpful. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Greg. We've got another tapping question here from Dell in Cedar Falls. Hi, Dell.
This is Dell.
Hi. What's your question?
The question is, how do you close the wound when you remove a spile?
So you don't need to do anything. The tree naturally closes itself. And it's really good to allow the tree that natural process. So just like our own bodies, you know, when it works well, you know, it's going to close the scar up. Same goes with the tree. So there's nothing, you know, you don't need to put any paste or any protective covering over it. It just naturally does it. And, you know, if you do it once, you know, that first year you tap your trees and you find out that, you know, you start to have, you know, weird things growing the next year near the area where you tapped, or, you know, you start to get some damage, you know, a lot of lost bark near that area, it may just be a sign that the tree is either older or is suffering from something else. You just don't want to stress it again. But naturally, and actually, Del, because you're in Cedar Falls, if you ever want to come out and see our trees, you can actually see the scars from previous years on the trees. And so they just close on up just like our own skin would.
All right, Del, thanks a lot for your call. And let's do a couple oak tree questions here, Aaron. I know people, again, are getting itchy to get outside. Diane in Riverside says, what is our window of opportunity right now for pruning an oak tree?
Typically, we don't recommend that you prune oaks between March and October. So you'll want to get out as soon as possible to get that work done. And of course, this is important because the insects that spread oak wilt are most active in that March to October range. So we want to prune outside of that range. So getting it done soon will be a good idea.
Well, and when we had Mark Vitash on last, he thought that probably we'll have a little bit longer window because we had such a deep freeze. But it is warming up quickly. Thank goodness. It's warming up quickly.
Yeah. The trees don't have a calendar, so it's okay if it's maybe the first week of March, especially depending on how the weather goes. But you'll want to get it done as soon as possible.
All right. And Larry in Elkader also has a question about oaks. He says, we have a couple of oaks that blew down last fall. Is it safe to cut them up for firewood now, or do we need to wait for the winter?
I would think it would be fine. I guess I don't know that much about harvesting. Actually, Katie might know a little bit more about harvesting firewood than I do, but certainly those trees should be fine for cutting up.
Right.
Whenever
and
you're
ready. Not going to infect them because they're dead, right?
Right. Right.
So, Katie,
right.
I'm missing there?
Depending on if it's a large property, you know, I do know some folks, especially after the derecho, where, you know, they want to leave it lay to let it dry out and season, and then cut it up. So, depending on your situation, you know, if you have a large property and it's towards the back, you know, it might just be more efficient to wait till it dries naturally, and then cut it up for firewood. But of course, you know, you can't wait too long. Otherwise, you know, it gets punky and starts to rot too much.
Right. So we don't know of any impediments to that at the moment. Let's get back to the phones. Chloe's on the line in Center Point. Hi, Chloe.
Hello. So I'm a fan of morel mushrooms, and I was wondering if it was possible to grow those on my own and if there were any tips you could give me on how to do that.
All right, Aaron, you've been asked that before.
Yes, I wish there was. Morel mushrooms have a very complex symbiotic relationship with all the other microorganisms and trees and roots and everything that are in the ground. And to date, we have not figured out how to harness all of those factors together to get a morel mushroom to reliably produce for us. So the short answer is no, we can't really cultivate morel mushrooms. That's part of the reason why they're so valuable, because you have to go out and find them.
All right. Sorry,
all
Chloe.
Right. Thank you.
You are not alone in that desire, though. I can tell you that much. We still have time for a couple more calls. 866-780-9100 is the number. Gary is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, all.
Hi.
I'm looking to plant a row of emerald green arborvitae for a privacy fence. And everything I've read says don't plant them until the fall. Is that rule of thumb, or can I do it in the spring?
You should be fine planting these trees in the spring. Earlier in the spring would be a little bit better than later. Evergreens in particular that are planted really late in the spring season and then go into our hot and sometimes dry summers can really suffer. So that first year, and then again, probably the first couple of years, actually, making sure that they are adequately watered will be a really good thing for these particular plants. Because if they dry out too much, that's when we see a lot of issue. And it's a little less likely when temperatures cool down in the fall, which is why sometimes you see that recommended. But spring is fine. If you have them, you can get them. Just as early in the spring as you can do it would be best for evergreens.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Gary. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's a question from Dan for you, Aaron. I have some gigantic hostas I need to tame. How do I go about splitting them, and anything I need to do to transplant the amputees to a new location?
Well, actually, this is good timing to be thinking about this, because the best time to divide a plant like hosta is right when it starts to emerge out of the ground. These like little points will come up out of the ground. And what you'll do is dig up the entire clump, pull it up out of the ground. If it's big, It will be a little bit of kind of wrestling to get it out of the ground, and then use a sharp spade, a knife, a sawzall, something to cut it into pie-shaped pieces, because the center of that plant is likely dead if it's really large. And then move those pieces to their new homes and water them in, and you're all set to go. But when they're first coming up out of the ground, when there's not a lot of foliage in the way, but you can see where the plant is the best time to do this work. And that usually happens, well, it depends on the weather, I suppose, but it's usually early April-ish when that happens.
All right. And amputees is a technical phrase that you use quite a bit when talking about.
I guess. I call them propagules, but you can, you know, and they're actually put them, if you have a friend that needs them, they're usually, the root ball is usually intact enough that you can set it like just in a plastic bag, as long as they promise to get it in the ground right away. That can work well. Or you can find a new home somewhere else on your own property.
Great. Let's get another question in here. This is from Liza in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Liza.
Hi, Charity. I have a hydrangea bush. It is in my front yard. I planted it about, or I transplanted it about 10 years ago. It's very large, and it didn't bloom this year. I had the buds, but it didn't actually, I didn't get any flowers. So I'm just trying to figure out if that was a fluke or, you know, try to figure out what happened.
Do you know what type of hydrangea it is, like the cultivar name, or if it's like a panicle hydrangea or anything like that?
I don't.
Does it have kind of, when it does bloom, is it more ball-shaped or they tend to be more elongated?
They're a ball shape.
Okay. So it's either the kind of what I sometimes refer to as the Annabelle types, because Annabelle is the most popular cultivar of hydrangea. Mm-hmm. The smooth type, or it's one of the big leaf hydrangeas like Endless Summer or Twist and Shout. And these are cultivars that are pretty common. If they didn't bloom last year, they either sometimes when they are not getting adequate moisture, the flowers may dry out before they are allowed to open. Sometimes if they're in really, really deep shade, they won't bloom as well. Hydrangeas are very shade tolerant, but not like super deep, dark shade stuff. They won't bloom as mm-hmm. well in those situations. So you okay. can look into that. If they are the big leaf types, it's really common for these plants to stop blooming after a handful of years. And we're not quite sure exactly why these cultivars behave this way. It's probably because of our winters. And okay. often the best course of action is just replacing them with something new.
Summer. Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Bummer's so often the response that you get, Aaron.
Well, I'm not trying to. I mean, if it is the smooth type hydrangea, it may just need a little bit more light or a little bit more water, and it's fine. But those big leaf hydrangeas are super popular because they're so pretty.
Yeah,
but they
gorgeous.
Just don't. They're just not good long term plants for us in Iowa.
Well, someday we'll be able to travel again and see them, maybe in yeah. England and in some really beautiful conditions in other places. Aaron Style, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And Katie Kloos, what a treat. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much, Charity.
Katie Kloos is a naturalist at Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls, and they are celebrating March Maple Madness all month long. So you can check out what they're doing on their website, hartmanreserve.org. They'll be tapping trees tomorrow. And of course, check out your local nature center as well. A lot of people are having maple syrup celebrations this time of year. And hey, if you are a book lover, please subscribe to the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast, a new in-depth conversation every month, plus bonus episodes. We're reading The Overstory for March. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.